Over the past few years, the question of reparations for slavery has gone from the intellectual fringes into the political mainstream, with presidential candidates staking out official positions. Now, several universities have begun addressing their role in this country's legacy of slavery and racism. Georgetown, Princeton Theological Seminary, and Virginia Theological Seminary are creating scholarships, while Harvard, Yale, and Brown have publicly admitted to benefiting from the slave trade. Now, the Prime Minister of Antigua and Barbuda has requested reparations from Harvard Law School because an Antiguan plantation owner helped found the school. This is leading to big questions regarding the right way to address reparations and who should benefit. For more on this, I'm joined by Marcia Chatelain, Professor of History and African American Studies at Georgetown University. Marcia, welcome to the show.
Hello.
Also on the line is Leslie Harris, Professor of History at Northwestern. Welcome, Leslie.
Thank you for having me.
Marcia, let's start with you. What has been the approach by Georgetown, Princeton Theological, and Virginia Theological Seminaries? Are your thoughts that they are approaching reparations appropriately?
I think that they are taking a step to do something that I think is critical for all universities, is to use the history of the institution to animate actions that can help people understand their deep indebtedness to this past and their capacity to make some type of reconciliation. While I don't know if these measures are actually moving towards full reparations, meaning, you know, kind of moral, financial, spiritual apologies for their dependence on slavery, I do think that these frameworks help institutions act more creatively in thinking about how this past very much shapes their directions moving forward.
Leslie, these three are religious institutions, the ones that have set up scholarships, and they've used the language of sin and redemption when addressing reparations. Is that necessary and or significant in the larger discussion about slavery and the role it played in the founding of our nation?
It's certainly not the only language that we can use, but I don't think it's a coincidence that we have three religious institutions that have taken this move first. At the same time, the idea of reparations is not only about sin. It's not only about religion. We also have secular ethics. We have an understanding of justice. Many of the projects to investigate the history of slavery were rooted in a sense of justice, which is both a secular and a religious imperative. So I think that other institutions should perhaps take notice, but there are other ways that we can address this that aren't purely rooted in religion.
Marcia, do you get the sense that these universities are really looking for a way to open up a conversation on reparations and slavery, or is it more, let's resolve this and move on?
I think it's probably more in the direction of let's resolve this and move on. And the reason why I think that this is a dangerous approach is that when we use only the institution as the place in which this repair work happens. So you mentioned scholarships, which we don't have at Georgetown University, but other institutions may pursue that path. We suggest that the great tragedy of universities and slavery is that people couldn't go to their schools. And it's far bigger than that. And I think that this conversation has to lead into ethical work policies for workers on campus, for the business that universities do overseas in the Middle East, and the labor conditions people are working under in those places. I think it's about the ways that universities have been complicit with over-policing. And so there's all of these other ways that this question of racial justice has to happen off campus.
I want to ask you both. We mentioned at the top of the show that the Prime Minister of Antigua and Barbuda sent a letter to Harvard University demanding reparations. What were your immediate thoughts when you heard this news? Because this opens up a larger conversation about who should receive reparations. Marcia.
I think it's wonderful. I think that the more we have examples of who universities are indebted to, the more expansive we have of a vision of the roles and responsibilities of slaveholding entities. And so I think it's more than appropriate for a nation to seek recompense because of the slave trade and because of slavery that didn't just happen within the context of what we call the United States. This is a global problem.
Leslie, what are your thoughts on that? Because it definitely, there have been folks who say that reparations should only be paid to the direct descendants of American born slaves in the United States.
Well, one thing, I think that that move to only pay reparations to the descendants of American-born slaves is about a very particular set of harms. And the more that we learn about the interrelationship of U.S. institutions with the Atlantic world, with the Caribbean, with South America, that before there was a United States, there was a British Empire, there was a French Empire, that those places were all interconnected, I think we'll have a deeper understanding of why reparations for such a place is necessary. But one more thing I want to note is that that was not a conversation that began yesterday. Barbuda and Antigua contacted Harvard in 2014, and Harvard ignored them. So I think that points to a sort of oligarch, if you will, that they have so much money and power that they feel that they can ignore these conversations. And it's somewhat upsetting to know that an institution in the United States simply ignored the initial outreach from two nations to ourself.
Leslie, universities are also confronting, as are cities around the country, confronting the names of public figures on their buildings, the statues on their campuses for the legacy of racism. Does that fight mirror the fight for reparations on campus?
Absolutely. One of the first ways in which students in particular sought repair, if we look at the root word of reparations, is to change the names on some buildings, to remove the names of enslavers and to replace those names with people who have fought for justice for all. And so that is a small, but as we have seen with UNC and with Yale, a very tension-filled action. Even that small action has been fought very hard by institutions. So I think we will continue to see energy around that, but I wouldn't want us to lose sight of the fact that it is not just a name on a building, but the economic, long-term economic impact that these institutions have had in putting forth racist ideologies and in supporting slavery that lead us to some of the very difficult problems we have with poverty today.
And Marcia, we've got about a minute left, but just your thoughts on where you think this is headed. Will we start to see universities really outside of the theological seminary world begin to create reparations or some form of reparations going forward?
I think that unless institutions are pushed from the grassroots level, from the students, from the descendants of individuals they may have held and ownership in the past, I don't think we will see a mass movement. I think that this conversation helps us understand the distinctions among higher education. There's a reason why religious institutions may have the language to enter this conversation that some public institutions don't. But we also have to keep in mind that in some of our institutions in the South, there are some real tensions about this conversation because that history is not buried in the past, and the descendants of slaveholding people are also part of the power structure in some states. So I don't know if this is going to lead to a mass movement at institutions, but I think people will be asking better questions about higher ed.
Marcia Chatelain, Professor of History and African American Studies at Georgetown, and Leslie Harris, Professor of History at Northwestern. Thanks to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.